All right, we're back here with Dr. Timothy Shaffer here on In Focus, News Radio KMAN. Lots going on in the news, including yet another Supreme Court justice nominee. You know, I'm 37 years old, and I remember going several years without seeing a whole lot of these, and we've seen, this is, I believe, the fourth one in the last 5 or 6 years, going back to Neil Gorsuch under the Trump administration. And we're learning a lot here about Ketanji Brown Jackson. She would be, if she's nominated, would be the first black woman Supreme Court justice nominee, and that's a big historical deal here.
It is. You know, if people have been watching the confirmation hearings the last couple of days, it's it's highlighted, I think, both that as this really important moment in a lot of ways as we look at, you know, some of the other Supreme Court justices who were those firsts, and some of them still in the court now, right? But it also highlights, I think, as we were talking about just a little bit ago, the ways in which some of these processes, whether it's about voting or whether it's about some of these hearings, a lot of this is much more about the seemingly, I should say, the senators having things to say rather than having kind of substantive inquiry about, you know, kind of the substance from the nominee from Brown Jackson. So it's an interesting process, but it does highlight, I think to really remember for our relatively long history in the United States, we are at this point that, you know, it wasn't that long ago when President Obama was elected, right? And we have this moment to say, here's the first person who is not, you know, where we've been before. Here's a black man. When Vice President Harris, right, when she gets elected with President Biden, becomes this first woman, right? You've got these moments that are all happening in the real recent past. But yeah, to your point, the composition of the Supreme Court in the last few years, there was a lot of stability. I'm a little bit older than you, but not a whole heck of a lot. And a lot of those names stayed put seemingly for a long time. And all of a sudden now, if you've got some scholastic book sitting around your house, I imagine your Supreme Court page is out of date.
I don't claim to know a whole lot about her, Ketanji Brown Jackson. What do you know about her record?
Well, I mean, so interestingly, she's done a lot of things. And so there's a graphic that was floating around a couple days ago that she's been a public defender. She's been, an attorney, a jurist. She was a federal judge, the Court of Appeals in D.C., since 2021, which in many ways is kind of the those who follow the Supreme Court will say that's kind of like a stepping stone. So many of particularly our recent Supreme Court nominees and now justices have kind of moved through that channel. Famously, Merrick Garland was also there and was until he went into the Department of Justice as secretary. So she's been in a lot of different places, but has also followed fairly traditional paths, right? She went to Harvard, as many of them have, for both undergrad at Harvard College and Harvard Law. And so she's kind of, you know, kind of clerked in these ways and followed in the footsteps that and with Breyer, in fact, to fill, I think, check the boxes, so to speak, that would be kind of expected in some regards for a lot of the people who have been in those roles, but also, as I said earlier, has been in some other roles as someone who practices law that honestly many have not been in the recent past. So I think that's also good, right? Having people, I mean, she's served, she was part of the she was the former vice chair of the United States Sentencing Commission. And, you know, things like that we have become, I think, more aware of how the discrepancies exist within the legal system. I think those are really important for people to have some closer read and perspective on some of that. And as we said, right, as a black woman, being able to, experience some of these things as someone who's in courtrooms, sitting at the table or sitting on the bench, and having some of that awareness, as she said in her hearings, you know, operating in kind of a fair and neutral sort of way, which they all say is really important. But having that lived experience too is like you can't act like that doesn't come into play. But I think in a positive way, right? Having more people who are in those conversations, right, as they're they hear these oral arguments and then they kind of close the doors and they really talk through these things together. That's how the Supreme Court works. And I think having more perspective, like that's – think about any kind of group process. Like it's a whole lot better to have people who come from different places and experiences and can say, yeah, well, what about this? Like I don't know exactly if that's how they talk about it. I feel like it's probably a little bit more formal and such. But if I was in there, I feel like I'd be like, yeah, what about this? And it seems like that's – I think that's good for our democracy.
Yeah. Well, continue to watch those hearings, see what goes on. I don't think I've ever experienced somebody not getting nominated, except maybe Merrick Garland, but that was a whole different process because we were changing presidents.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think – and that has come up here. Senator Durbin kind of raised this because one of the lines that's being used by some folks is about the potential of packing the court and things like that, which I think is highly unlikely. This is just a replacement situation, right? Senator McConnell is the only one in the recent past who has kind of altered that composition of the nine individuals because of the argument was that it was during an election year and close to it, although Coney Barrett was closer and all these other things. So, I don't want to say more about that, but yes, the scenarios, it has become much more contentious, right? With when Ginsburg went through and others, like it was overwhelmingly like 93-6 or things like that. And in the recent past, it has been much more along party lines, which I think is an indication of where we've been. And I think one of our challenges is how do we get out of having this overly politicized process for this apolitical institution that is being driven by the political discourse, right? So it's hard to kind of unwrap some of that. But yeah, famously Robert Bork in 87, right, was one that had to withdraw. But it was a little bit different scenario. So, none of these are quite one-to-one situations. But I guess I would hope, and maybe it really is just a hope, But I wish some of these things would allow us to function a little bit differently and say, how do we think about this collectively rather than thinking about what gives me the 15-second soundbite to now put into an email to my supporters or for my detractors just to take it and say, look at this idiot. Like, I don't know. I guess I like to have faith in those in government and especially elected office. But they keep making it harder for me to hold those feelings, those views.
Yeah, understandable. Well, lastly here as we wrap things up, I just want to get your thoughts on the passing of Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, speaking of prominent women who held leadership roles here.
Yeah. So Madeleine Albright, right, she comes to the United States as an 11-year-old from Czechoslovakia, really in many ways, when I saw this news come out, my first thought was, how unfortunate, because in many ways, she spoke a lot about what was happening in Eastern Europe during World War II and that period, really the idea of democracy as this way to respond to these kind of alternative ways of existing. She was the first female Secretary of State. She was 84. In many ways, she stepped into a role that was obviously and still in many regards is dominated by men, but I think is less so in some ways. I don't know if I always want to be like, this is, the glass ceiling is absolutely broken and all this other stuff, because in many ways those fragments are still there, right? So you can't just kind of go up through there and you kind of get stuck in a lot of respects. But I think she demonstrated the ability for us to get out of some of those categories of who's supposed to be in certain types of roles. What do they look like? What are some of those experiences? Because I think her views, especially in her early life, that were really, in responding to things like, the Nazis and this kind of communist repression, like really pushed her to make strong arguments why a place like the United States should respond to some of the crises that they have. And a few years ago, I'm not going to remember the book that she wrote, but it was along these themes, right? How do we reinforce and support democracy? I think this is a moment to really appreciate someone like Madeleine Albright for all that she did, and the many others who have been inspired and influenced by someone like her and have pursued careers, but also just been reminded that whoever you are listening, or if you got a grandchild or a daughter or whatever it might be, regardless of kind of who they are, boy or girl, is seeing a future that is open with possibilities rather than being restricted because of that.
All right. Well said. Well, Dr. Shaver, always good to talk to you
here. It's good to be here.
And we'll talk to you again next month.
Yeah, thanks so much.